getting hot. It's getting hot, Paul. I'm sweating again.
And yeah, it's toasty here too.
It's humid. It's just humid out. I went to the fair last night. That was interesting. I saw a lot of people who are not like me. I saw a lot of people
in many different ways, or were they not like you in a similar way each time?
A little bit of both, maybe. it was very different. So it was called the Tunbridge World's Fair, and so I didn't expect it to be as big as it was, or as many people there as there were. But apparently, people come from miles and miles around to go to this thing. So we parked in a giant field nestled between a river and two mountains, basically. And yeah, it was a big fair. It was, I don't know, I haven't gone to anything like that in a long time. So it was kind of cool to get away from my computer and go outside and look at 50 different species of chicken and touch an ox.
So it was a lot of wildlife on display?
Just
like farm stuff?
Yeah, farm. Like, have you ever been to a county fair?
Maybe, but I've been to some fairs. I'm not sure if any of them were explicitly county level.
Well, it's just like farm, like different farms come around and they show their prize animals. Cause a lot, there's like competitions and stuff. So
sure.
We checked out the ram competition. They were comparing and contrasting rams and one of them won, I guess.
I think Android usually wins that.
Yeah. And then there was a guy that knew, he was an expert in sheep. And so he would just feel the sheep up and then like talk about how nice this one was for various reasons. And then they would hand it a ribbon and the person would take the sheep away.
The sheep was okay, right? That sounded kind of fine.
No.
someone came and took the sheep away. Oh, man.
They probably sheared it. I don't know. They have different, like they're graded on different qualities, like how like the different texture of their wool, the different patterns that they have. So I always thought this was really interesting is whenever you see someone that is really an expert in their field, but you have negative 100% experience in their field. Like, I know nothing about sheep, and this guy knew everything about sheep. So it was interesting to listen to him talk because he had such a knowledge, like a depth of knowledge and just years of experience doing what he was doing. And it was completely foreign to me. So I was just trying to understand some of what he was saying. But it's like really intriguing to me when I meet people like that, that are experts in their field and I know nothing about that field.
I think that's amazing too, because for so long, it was kind of like people act as if you could only be a nerd about like computers or video games or whatever. But you can actually be a nerd about nearly anything. And it's awesome when people are nerds about stuff like sheep. I have no idea about. And it's just, you can see how passionate and excited they are about that thing. And I love that.
Yeah,
it's one of the coolest things in the world.
I've been working a lot and it was kind of cool to get away from my computer. I picked up a bug, I think. And so at first I didn't want to go when Jimmy asked me, but because I wasn't feeling that great. But I started to feel better as the day went on and I'm glad I went and was outside just around, you know, people that are very different from me. Yeah, it was just a good experience to kind of like get myself out of being in my apartment working kind of rut.
I find that same exact thing. Like I'll be working on something, especially when I have like a deadline or whatever. I'm really trying to push myself and get things out the door and just polish things as much as possible. All that kind of stuff. I mean, everybody who works in dev knows what I mean there. But it can be so hard to say like, okay, I do need to step away. I do need to go to this event that is maybe just some weird thing that I don't even necessarily care about the subject matter so much.
Yeah.
But like every time I do that, it still ends up being really rewarding and I enjoy myself and I solve problems better when I get back.
Yeah. I mean, it's good just in general for life experience and stuff like that too, just to go somewhere where people are very different from you or somewhere you're not necessarily comfortable going. I don't necessarily like to be in large groups of people anymore. So it's always interesting to me, like to go smack into a fair where there's just booze and debauchery everywhere. And, now that I'm training, I've been training jiu-jitsu for a little while. I got promoted the other day, which was pretty cool.
Nice. Congrats.
But it's like my head's always on a swivel, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Like now that I'm aware of the different ways people could try to punch me, I'm always thinking of like, what would I do in that situation? And there's some sort of muscle memory there. So it's like weird to have that thought in the back of my mind, but it's always kind of there, I guess, in a crowd of people. But no, it's good just to get outside of your box. And from a technical standpoint too, we've talked about in the past, like how important it is to learn different languages, or even not just like learn them and try to be productive with them, but dig into something that's different than what you do, because there's always something you could take away from something that's
right. Even just learning concepts.
Yeah, yeah.
Like even just from code snippets that you've shared with me from Elixir, I've had ideas of like, oh yeah, that's a really sensible way to approach that, and here's how I could do that in Ruby or in JavaScript or in whatever.
Right. And it's the same way in life. Like, I learned some new tricks to my to the chili cheese fries game. I didn't eat any. I was trying to behave myself, but I saw a guy sitting on a stump. He was sitting on a stump. I told Jamie about this, and she was like, I didn't think you were serious when I first said that there was a dude sitting on a stump and he was eating chili cheese fries out of a dog bowl. And
how could you tell it was a dog bowl?
It looked like a dog bowl. It just was the shape of a dog bowl.
Okay.
Like a dog food bowl.
Like a classic Snoopy shape.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
With the slanted sides. Yeah.
He was sitting by himself on the stump and he was just eating chili cheese fries out of a dog bowl. And so I just filed that away. I was like, that's peculiar. And I kept walking. And then I turned the corner and I see a guy standing up and he's eating out of a dog bowl too. And it turns out that the chili cheese fry, one of the many chili cheese fry vendors, was serving chili cheese fries in dog bowls.
Oh, that was their shtick.
Yeah, that was their thing. You could buy a dog bowl full of chili cheese fries. So I was like, that was interesting. I wonder if it makes it taste different because everyone had it. But no, it was, I don't know, it was cool. It's just one of those things where you get out and you be around people that are different and just observe. It was cool, like, seeing the people. I mean, as much of an expert as this guy was in sheep, there was somebody there that was an expert in ox and how to convince an ox to pull a sled full of concrete, basically. Is they're having some sort of like ox pull competition. And they're obviously experts in that. And there's experts in dairy cows and different types of chickens and baby pigs. And the baby pigs were, I think, the most popular attraction by the stables or the barns. There was consistently a crowd of people trying to pick these pigs up.
That must be really stressful as a pig. I mean,
as a pig? Yeah, just have people, like strangers, picking you out of a pen.
I think I've been thinking about that a lot lately because we've been doing the RV thing a bit more with our dogs. And it's just like, what do you think is happening right now? You have no concept of what we're doing.
Right. They're just going with it. It is what it is.
But animals just are generally pretty all right with whatever, as long as it doesn't hurt and as long as they're being fed.
I wish more people were like that.
Oh my goodness, right?
That was, so, I mean, it's always interesting. So like going to the fair, you'll overhear like racist conversations, or you'll overhear like sexist conversations, or like people making comments about other people that are passing by them. And usually people have been drinking a little bit, so they're not shy about saying things into the open air. And so you hear lots of unsavory conversations and stuff like that. And what's crazy is that if you strip away environmental effects and you strip away like them, I mean, environmental being like them growing up in around other people that may have the same sentiments and the same ideals, mm-hmm. You strip that away, it really is just you're looking at something that's different than you, you don't understand it. And then the natural human instinct, or I guess their natural instinct, is to not like it, or that is weird. I think like when you hear someone describing something and they use the word weird, it's always kind of a watered down, maybe like misunderstood description of something. But what's funny is that, so I was around some of that last night and I was just kind of like, I lived in different areas where it's more acceptable to be like that. And so I can understand why those people, or how those people have those ideas. So it was also kind of weird, like getting on Twitter this morning and seeing, so there's a bunch of news around like WordPress is dropping React because of the patent issues, which is a whole nother discussion in and of itself, because WordPress has a very unique situation there where they're like, whenever they ship updates to WordPress core, they're shipping updates to a quarter of the internet, you know?
Right.
So if there's a patent thing and they're accepting React's patents and they ship an update to a quarter of the internet, then suddenly a quarter of the internet is also accepting that license, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot of implications. It's not just automatic saying we're okay with these license terms. It's, like you said, literally a quarter of the internet.
Right.
I mean, like 5% of the internet, because nobody upgrades WordPress, but...
Yeah. And so I got on Twitter this morning, and I remember reading about it yesterday, I think it was, when I saw it, and then TechCrunch posted an article about it. So it got way more press, I think, just in general in the developer world. And so I saw a bunch of unsavory tweets, like picking at Vue and picking at Vue syntax, and a lot of descriptions were weird. Like I said, like if you describe something as weird, maybe you shouldn't describe it that way, because maybe you don't actually understand fully what you're saying, or maybe you actually need to internalize it more to be able to replace that word with something that's more
weird. Is not a useful word. Like, it doesn't really mean anything.
It's subjective.
If your criticism of something is that it is weird, that means you don't even know what it is yet.
Right. It's just foreign to you, and so it's different, and you don't like it. In most cases, that is. So yeah, I started seeing a lot of tweets about that, and I saw just people saying stuff that maybe they should have thought twice about before they hit the tweet button or send button or something like that. And it was just weird because, well, I just did it. I just did it, Paul.
We're all human.
Well, it gave me a weird feeling because like the two connected, like the two worlds connected, something completely, like two things that are completely different were the same in some way, and they collided in my mind at that moment, if that made sense. So
I think I get what you're saying there. I just remember you talking about these debaucherous people. I just remembered a rodeo I actually went to in my hometown. I was probably like, I don't know, 11 or 12 years old. I was a real piece of work at that age. And there was a gentleman who was a little rowdy. He was smoking and drinking, and he was wearing a shirt that had a woman on it with her chest exposed. And I went up to this guy. As a little 12-year-old kid, I went up to him and tapped him, and I said, "Excuse me, I think your shirt is really inappropriate. There are children around." And he laughed at me and just blew smoke in my face and walked away.
What a nice guy.
And it just reminded me of that. I haven't thought about that in years.
Yeah, it's different, right? So, I mean, doing the band stuff, I was around that kind of scene all the time, and now I'm not. Like, I don't drink myself. I never had a drop of alcohol in my life, so I don't really, like, now I have no reason to go to the bar because I don't drink. And for me, it's more stressful than anything, for just because of my personality and being more introverted, I guess. So like going to a bar is more stressful than relaxing for me.
I drink heavily, and I agree.
Yeah.
Bars are not for everyone.
It felt somewhat like being in a bar because there was an 80s metal cover band, and they played all the hits. They played all the good hits, played all the Journey hits and everything. So it was, there was like loud music, and there were lights, and just people and drinking and smoking, and farm animals mixed in there, and fried dough. And you know what I find actually kind of funny is, we were waiting in line for, I wanted a hot dog. I was hungry, and I was like, I need a hot dog. So I was waiting in line, and then I looked across the gravel road, and there was a burrito stand. And I was like, I'm going to get a burrito because there's not a single person there. And so I go over to get a burrito, and he gives me the burrito, and I had him put hot sauce on it and like lettuce, and it was like iceberg lettuce, and hot sauce was like Frank's Red Hot, which is actually supposed to go on chicken. Mm-hmm. And it was just not a great burrito. And I was like, that makes sense. That's why no one was there.
That's always the thing with food trucks, man. If you look for the one with the shortest line, you're probably going to be disappointed.
I really didn't want to eat fried dough, though. I did up eating, well, we were looking for funnel cake and there wasn't any. And so we ended up literally eating a piece of fried bread with like strawberry jelly on it. Or something.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, no, it was.
You're making
it was
me hungry, man.
Yeah, it was a. Did you want to go throw some bread in the deep fryer? It was good.
I might have to get some started.
You reminded me of something really cool I used to do when I was younger. So, like, I tell people I'm from Minneapolis, but I actually grew up in a smaller town near Minneapolis, and it just kind of saves the whole like, oh, I've never heard of it. Where is that? You know.
Thing. Oh yeah, right. Oh, you know, it's there. You go 30 minutes northwest of so and so, and yeah,
right.
It's the worst.
Yeah. And if Brittany and Sarah hear this, it might like give them some flashbacks into a different life. But there used to be in St. Peter, there used to be a fair every year called the Traverse. There was a museum called the Traverse des Sioux, and it was a Native American museum. And so they would essentially have, it wasn't really a fair, but it was like a fair type setup, but it was all about Native Americans and the culture around Native Americans and their history and food and stuff like that. And that was one of my favorite things to do every year, was to go eat wild rice soup and learn about that. Cause I'm actually part Native American myself. So I always thought that was really interesting. But yeah, anyway, like it was a good like breakup to just writing code all day, going to sleep, and then writing code all day and then going to sleep for the past week or so.
Right. Yeah, getting out there is so important. I've been doing that this weekend. I'm actually taking this weekend off except for like any bug reports, obviously, like from users or whatever. Mm-hmm. Emergencies only, right? Because I shipped the app. The app is live in the App Store. Nest Notes, you can look for it in the App Store, audience. and download it.
I'm going to do it right now.
It is up and it is live and it is approved. And I am so, so relieved. Finally, after forever, it's up there and it's like working and it is fully supports iOS 11. So I don't have to worry about that. And I'm just so relieved.
How does it feel though? How do you feel about that? The fact that your app is finally live in the App Store.
I mean, I'm excited. I was pretty nervous going into the review process because I've talked a little bit about the architecture here, but basically the entire thing is the majority of it lives inside an iframe, and it's loading a customized version of my build. So it has like custom environment variables that tell it when you're running on this. In this mode, you need to do certain things for native. So it has like a post message API, so it can actually communicate with the native wrapper for things like detecting when the connection's offline or if it's unable to connect to NestNodes at all for some reason. Like if we're having maintenance, it can display special notices and all that kind of stuff. And also hook into things eventually, like push notifications. And I've talked about this before a little bit, but that's kind of in a gray area for App Store things. Mm-hmm. But it went through without a problem. And also what's really cool is Basecamp released this fantastic article. We'll get in show notes. A wonderful article though, I believe sometime in the last week. Anyhow, it goes over their architecture for their iOS app and it's super cool. In a lot of ways, it's very similar. It uses a lot of the same ideas that I'm using for NestNodes where every single page on any URL on Basecamp can be loaded up in the app and it will appear in the native app, just loaded over the internet, right?
Right.
Well, then what they can do is for certain pages, they can say, okay, well, this we're not providing a great experience here for native mobile. The web view just doesn't really translate right. It just doesn't do what we think is a great job. Mm-hmm. And so then for any given page, they can actually just say, tell the app, hey, we actually want you to load a completely different thing, and it's going to be all native custom code, which is really awesome. But I just think the entire approach is pretty great because it lets them move really quickly. When they want to add new features, they can just ship them, and they don't have to go through the app review process or anything like that.
Right.
But then if they do want to give a really nice native experience customized for a certain action or a certain page, they can do that. And then obviously sure. They still have to go through all the Apple hoops, and they have to obey all the laws and rules and whatever, but they have that flexibility and they, that really seems like kind of the best of both worlds. And I'm really excited to hopefully kind of move in that direction a little bit more and investigate what my options are there. And it's just nice that somebody big like Basecamp is doing a similar approach, right? It gives me a little bit of peace of mind in terms of the app review process.
Right. I was going to ask you if you're able to do that. I mean, it makes sense that you would be if you're really just loading into an iframe. You can say, for example, you find a runtime error in JavaScript. It would suck to have to go through the whole review process again.
Right.
To push something, push a relatively small fix like that, you know, and it sounds like you just don't have to worry about that, which is awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, there are downsides to this approach. Like if you have no internet connectivity, you just can't use the app. Right now, there's not really any reasonable way for me to introduce offline support. And I may end up changing this in the future. I may make it something where I actually do a Nuxt has the new spa option. So you can actually build out, you can have like an artifact that you can just deploy anywhere to like a CDN or whatever, but it's your full site without the SSR parts.
Right.
And I may end up switching to doing that for the native app. So it doesn't have to do the iframe thing. But I like having that flexibility there.
Have you looked into any of the local storage options for Vuex? I've noticed there, I think it was the site called Alligator, some Alligator.js or something. They released an article with five different Vuex plugins that you can use. And a couple of them were dealing with offline storage or local storage.
I've looked into those a little bit. It's just not something that's a high priority on my list right now to kind of deal with. I already have a customized store for NestNodes that handles a couple things like where my authentication data goes, and I have a feature where it saves moments in progress if you like leave the page or reload or whatever as you're editing and so that actually all gets synced through the post message API back up to the native wrapper if it's running in the native wrapper, or otherwise gets synced to a different store locally inside the actual web app. So there's a bit of custom logic that has to go on there because of the way I'm running things right now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, the offline thing isn't a major deal, especially if you don't have a... I guess it would be if your app was oddly specific in the sense that people were using it a lot in offline situations, but I don't feel like your app would be used in that situation very often. So I think you're right. It's probably not a big priority.
It might be. It might end up being something that people really want. But I mean, the fact of the matter is we just launched and we have very few users at the moment. So we won't even know how people are using it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I've been thinking about that a lot for Watch Nature, because that is oddly specific in the sense that it probably or hopefully will be used in slow connection or offline situations. Sure. As people are out and about in the wilderness. So that's an interesting problem to solve. I'm not really sure how I'm going to go about some of that yet. One thought that I had was, if you try to add photos, especially with like the image upload, we could add like a draft locally in your local storage with a representation of the data, and when you get connection next time it tries to, I don't know if it would automatically or if it would ask for permission, like, hey, we have connection now, we can upload these observations that you have or something. But it seems like it's going to need to be like almost a feature in and of itself, not like a toss everything to local storage and let it be.
Right. That's exactly the thing. You can't just be like, oh, I've enabled local storage synchronization for my Vuex, so now everything just works. No, right. I mean, there's a lot of UI and other sorts of thinking that has to go into it.
Caching being a big one. How do you know when to refresh it and all that stuff? So yeah, that's going to be a whole thing, which I haven't really started thinking a ton about yet, but there's always time for it. I've still been digging into the backend sort of things, learning more about Elixir, learning more about Ecto specifically, learning more about just designing stuff. And as I go trying to not, I don't say this in like a derogatory way towards Rails, but like purge some of the Rails ways of doing things from my mind. So that way I don't have like a set way or a set feeling towards building a feature, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Just trying to open my mind up a little bit more about things like that. And one really cool thing that happened was I was working on the liking feature for Watch Nature, so you can like posts and observations and stuff like that. And I was thinking about how to design it and how I would structure it. And after talking with Chris McCord, he was the guy that originally created Phoenix, I talked with him for a little bit, and he ended up using a good bit of our conversation in the keynote presentation for ElixirConf this year, which was pretty cool.
I watched that keynote. It was very good, and other folks should watch it as well.
It was just funny because I got a couple of texts. They're like, what in the world? I was like, yeah, I don't know. Because I knew several people that went to the conference. But sure. But like talking with him, it was interesting because he was like, oh, well, you could just move this out into its own thing. Like, it doesn't have to be attached to the resource that you're liking, you know. And so what we ended up coming up with is a reactions module. And so reactions are all self-contained. And like if you want to create a like for a post, my API interface is like reaction.addLike, and it takes a post and a user, and it goes ahead and abstracts away like any of like join table creations, any of that stuff. And then in Rails, you would use serializers. In Phoenix, you just have, you just put it in the views, and a view isn't like a template, by the way. A view is essentially similar to a serializer. And if you return a map out of a view, it gets turned into JSON. It gets serialized into JSON for you. So what you can do in the view is you can see, does this thing have any likes? If it does, then you could do like a reaction.getLikes and pass in the post, pass in the current user, and that would return a count or something like that. So it ended up being like really easy. It was just the hard part was arriving at that, kind of like removing it, because I was trying to design it coupled to comments, which didn't seem like a good idea, or observations and posts, which didn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when people are starting out with programming, they think that a lot of programming is actually writing code. And the reality of it is a lot of programming is writing pseudocode or writing code out in your head, or just like thinking about how things should work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the actual writing code part, especially as you get more experience and like aren't having to look up as much syntax and all that kind of stuff. Once you know how to work with the language, the actual writing code part is not that much time usually.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
More planning and architecting and figuring out like what the code needs to be.
Right.
And once you know what the code needs to be, writing it is easy.
Yeah. In general, if you've done a good job planning, then the time it takes to write that would be shorter. That's what I found for sure. And so what I've been doing, is I just start shooting off messages into different Slacks. I'll just use whatever doc emoji they have, and I'll just start typing away, and people people just jump in. And it happened in this case that Chris himself jumped in, was asking or answering questions and stuff. But yeah, that's what I do. And that's what I encourage other people to do. I'm encouraging. So my mom has been learning Swift lately. And she has an idea of her own for an iPhone app that would be very beneficial to her and my sister. And so she has this idea, and now she needs to figure out, how do I build it, you know? And so she keeps asking me questions, and I'm like, I really wish I could answer them. I don't know Slack very well, so I don't know Swift very well. So she's in a couple of different Swift Slacks. I was like, hey, just post into the void and see what happens, because in general, people are happy to help and answer questions. There's a very few percentage of people that make you feel dumb or make you feel stupid for asking questions, but you just got to shrug those people off.
And I think the other critical part of that is, like, a lot of times in Slacks, I'll see somebody ask a question, but it's not really a full question. And yeah, kind of what I mean by that is,
yeah,
somebody will say, okay, I'm just going to pull an example out of the air, but I'm having an issue with jQuery. Can somebody help? And that's not really actionable for other people in the Slack. Whereas if you say, I'm having an issue with jQuery where I see this error in the browser console and it's caused by this bit of code, and you include like that code or a screenshot of it at least or something, not only is that actually a real question that people might be able to help you answer, but that also means that instead of them having to reply back to you and say, okay, what's going on? And then you having to see that and reply back to them, and like, then you don't have this back and forth. So yeah, it's really, really critical if you're trying to do this, that you provide actionable information up front, so the people who see it can do something with that information, right, and like actually help you. Because like Sean was saying, I mean, people are there to help. People want to help in these Slacks. That's why most people are in them, is because they like hanging out with people and they like helping and they like thinking about these problems. But really making sure to put out the needed information to debug thing, the versions of things you're using, including like your OS and your browser version, if that's relevant, and all that kind of stuff is just really, really critical to get good help. And I've definitely seen people in the past kind of get like a little burnt out, I guess, in asking questions in Slacks. And if you follow that kind of advice, like actually giving as much information as possible up front, you will certainly have way better luck with Slacks and getting help.
Yeah, yeah. Don't just post stack traces. Actually think about the stack traces and post a real question.
Yep.
Yep.
Ba-da-bum-ba-dum-bum. Take one.